If you're just starting out in music, or maybe it's been a while since you've been releasing, it's super important to find real fans, true fans, people that are going to love your music because they like your music for what it is, and not because they're a friend or relative. In this episode, we're going to talk about finding those first true fans. So let's get to it.
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY. DIY.
Musician.
Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 297 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where on this episode, we're going to be discussing finding your first true fans. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
Good. I have found my first true fans, but I've not found a good webcam. So anyone who's just listening at home, be thankful.
Yeah, we've been having some tech issues for like the last hour and a half, and it's all Chris's fault.
It's all, every one of them is my fault. Yeah.
But we're here. We made it happen because that's what we do at the DIY Musician Podcast. We make it happen. And I'm excited about this episode. We've had a lot of people reach out recently asking, hey, can you do an episode about finding those first true fans, those first people that love your music and are real fans? And so we'll be discussing that today. And then we also have some listener calls and emails later on in the show. Those are always a lot of fun to get to. But first, if you are interested in playing the DIY Musician Conference, you need to get your ticket now. Tickets are only $99, and we give priority performance access to people that buy in at the early bird because we like to get this scheduled and know people are coming. And we're going to make sure there's plenty of performance opportunities this year. We've got the open mic. We're adding some daytime showcase opportunities. Chris and I were just in Austin a few weeks ago, and the hotel had this cool performance area in the lobby we're trying to snag and make sure that it's programmed with artists like you. But you got to get your ticket. It's only $99. Head over to DIYMusicianCon.com. That ticket price is only good till the end of the month. So get it locked in.
So you save, and you also get first access to. Put your name on that list to play, because that's who we're picking from.
Yes. Yes. And that doesn't mean nobody else could get an opportunity to play, but we give priority access to people. We go through that list first. We start plugging those people in first. So get your ticket. $99, DIYMusicianCon.com. You're going to want to be there. There's so many good things that are happening, more interactive opportunities. So many of the digital platforms are saying they're going to be there. We will start announcing those officially once we have them in writing, but they're all saying they're going to be there. It's your chance to talk to people, get advice from professionals, meet other artists, and just have a good time.
Good time.
Who doesn't want a good
time?
Be
together.
Be together. That's, I mean, for $99, I mean, some of you are spending that daily at Starbucks.
Kevin, I think you might have a problem. You might have a coffee issue if that's what you're spending.
Well, with gas money to drive to Starbucks and buy your coffee.
The whole inflationary picture you're painting.
Yes, okay. Yes. You might want to throw in a muffin. I mean, by that time, you're pushing $100. Go to the conference instead. It's well worth your money and time and effort. You'll feel so inspired and excited, and just especially after the last couple of years we've had, you need to do something for yourself and your music career. So hope to see you in Austin, August 26th through 28th, DIYMusicianCon.com, $99 tickets until April 30th. So there you have
Heck
it.
Yeah.
All right. This episode and this topic is an interesting one because even if you're not a new artist, I think this is something that artists feel like they're going back to square one if they've taken a break, or maybe it's been just the normal release cycle and you're trying to re-engage with people around your new music. Oftentimes it feels like you're starting from scratch again. So I think even if you're not new and you already have some fans, I think you're going to find some great value in what we're going to talk about. I think there's a lot of missed opportunities artists just don't think about. Some things that are just obvious right in front of your face oftentimes, but you know,
yeah,
it's work. And sometimes you just get tired of having to hustle, but you got to hustle.
Well, I think we have some good encouraging tips, but first,
Yes, Chris, you got a hot take.
I might have a cautionary, something to warn y'all about. Your friends are not your fans. Yes, you need all your friends, all your coworkers, your family, your community to get to those early gigs and like you on social when you're just starting out. But remember, they are not your fans. They might say they like your music. Maybe they might say they streamed your music on Spotify, or even say they bought a CD, and maybe they're telling the truth, but probably not. And that doesn't mean your music sucks. It doesn't mean anything personal against you. All it means is they're not your fans. You need to understand that, because it's super important to like galvanize that community very early on, because slowly you're going to burn through the goodwill and the social bonds that you have with these people. And they're going to say, you know, I've gone to see Chris 20 times. I don't need to see him anymore. I never liked him to begin with. I only do it because he's a nice guy and I see him every day. But as those people dwindle from your shows and from your email list, you're supposed to be replacing them with actual fans. So the sooner you know that your friends are not your real fans, the better you're going to be, and the more apt you will be to get those people to fulfill their social obligation to you, to make the venue look full and to make it look like cool things happening. So the folks who are inclined to become your fans are excited and come into your life, because your friends are doing you a favor. With your fans, you're doing them the favor. So yeah, I think that's a good place to start from.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to get to the point where when people see you coming, your friends or family, they like dive behind a corner like, oh crap, there's Chris.
He's gonna ask me to go to a show again.
I told him I was gonna go and I didn't show up. That's the other thing. There's those people that it's fine asking them, your coworkers, your family, your friends, but they're most likely doing it out of social obligation at times. So that doesn't mean they aren't fans and don't like your music, but you have to start looking beyond them, because that group of people will burn out real fast. And then you'll be standing there thinking, huh, we used to get 20 or 30 people to our show. Now I can only get two. And that's because all those people that were, you know, there to support you early on are like, all right, I'm not here for every gig that you do. You got to get beyond this. So I think it's important that we define what a true fan is before we talk about finding first true fans, because
now that we've told everyone what a true fan isn't.
Yeah. Well, and some people are like, dang, all I have are family and friends. But, you know, the thing that's interesting about family and friends and people that know you from other things besides music, what's that saying about, there's like a saying about a prophet never welcome in his hometown or something.
Oh, yeah, that sounds perfect. That's one of the reasons why people that you know really well are not inclined to be your true fan, because they know you too well. There's no mystique. Yeah. They knew you when you were in diapers and shit your pants. So you're never going to be a musical genius in their eyes. You might actually be one, but not to those people. So you got to go find other people.
Yeah. So I think that's one thing to point out with the, you know, when we're saying who they're not before we dive into who they are, is the idea is that we're trying to find people that see you for an artist, and your coworkers that want to come support you, they see you as somebody you work with. Your family and your close friends, that relationship supersedes everything else. And that's what they're going to see you at. So that, like you said, that mystique, that cool factor, it's not there in most of those cases. And so it's kind of like, oh, that's neat. Kevin has this cute little band that he goes and I'll go see them to support him. So we got to get to real fans, real people that think that, wow, I like this band. There's something cool, or that see you as artists and an artist that they want to follow and listen to. So what is a true fan, Chris?
Well, I have a few rules, although now that I say that, this first one is not a rule per se, but I think generally a true fan is someone who doesn't have social bonds and obligations to you. The better they know you before they hear your music, the less inclined they are to really be moved by it. I don't know why that is, but maybe it's that prophet's not welcome in his hometown thing. So generally, they're going to be strangers. The next thing is that obviously they have to be moved by your music, but not just in a like, oh, they're good kind of way. Like, they need to be moved enough that something about what you do feels like it speaks to them and says something about like their identity or something that they've been thinking about. You know, you play on some fascination they have or some way that they want to express themselves. I think another criteria is not just that they like you, but that they're willing to do what you ask them to do. And I don't mean like go jump off a bridge or pay me $1 million or something. It's like, will you come to my next show? Will you add my song to your playlist or something, you know, any of these sort of little things that you're asking them to do, will they be excited to take that action? And if they are, that's a really good indicator that they are a true fan. I think going along with the idea that your music needs to speak to their identity, are they willing to wear their fandom or their interest in your music like a badge of honor? You know, like if you had a t-shirt, would they be psyched to wear it? If they go to the office and someone's like, oh, what are you listening to? Are they going to tell someone about your music? So all those sorts of things where they can help you out in that way as well, kind of spread the word of mouth, invite people to your shows. That's really a good indicator. Are they tagging you in their Instagram stories? And then even though you're asking them to do things, I think it's important to reiterate that it doesn't need to be about them spending money. It's really just about them taking an action. So that could be as simple as liking you on Spotify or something like that. It doesn't necessarily need to be that they're spending a bunch of money on you.
Yeah. I like this list, especially that part about not about the money. It could be money in there.
But, we like those fans too.
But the thing is, you're looking for, all these are just indicators of intent that this person is somebody that is doing it or following along for the right reasons, not because they work with you or they're your mom. Those people are great too, but these people are following along for the right reasons, and you want to be able to recognize that and nurture it. And so that's what I think is important, to set the table for the conversation about understanding who these people are and what a true fan is compared to what a lot of other artists do. And the funny thing is, I've seen this play out in this whole thing play out in real life, when the band I had here in Portland, Hello Morning, was playing in the local scene, and we were really we were actually to the point where, like, we're not inviting friends and family anymore because we're past that, and we got to really start forcing ourselves to get beyond and go after those true fans. And you'd play a gig where this other band, you know, like you're on the bill with them and they fill it out and they think they're the best because it's like, it was their gig where all their friends and family came out. But you know, the next gig, there's going to be 10 people. And I've played gigs with those bands because it's like, oh, that band got a good turnout. And then you find out when they play the next time, nobody comes because
they just galvanize their initial community, which we all have to do. It's like, not to shame that, it's totally essential, because when you're starting out, literally no one else on the planet knows you even exist. So you have to go to the people who know you.
Yeah. And it's that transition. It's like, yeah, you got to start there, but we're talking about true fans and making that transition, because I think, you know, relating to this, the last episode with Jeff Tuohy, where we were talking about booking, that's one of those things where I've played or gone to a show with a band that had a massive turnout. I think it was, in my case, I went to the show and they had a massive turnout, and then we were playing with them like 2 months later and literally no one came to see them. And so it really was a bad impression on the club as well, because we thought there was going to be a big turnout, but it turned out when we asked them, they were like, oh, that was just our friends and family. And so, yeah, so it's really building that true following for your music. So we've broken this into a few sections, things to do if you're playing shows. A lot of times that's how artists start things out, is by playing shows. And that's a great way to start connecting with people. And then we've got one about how to find your first true fans online. And then we've got a little bonus section about connecting with your local scene, because I think there's a lot that can be done there, connecting with your local scene, that helps you tap into fan communities that will want to support you as an artist as well.
Yeah. And when we were kind of brainstorming this, I initially went in a whole like marketing 101 direction, where we were getting into branding and store, you know, coming up with your story and doing ads and all. And you were like, whoa, slow down. How does someone find their first fan if they're the type of person where if they literally get someone to sign up for their email list at a gig, like that's a big deal? I was like, oh, that's a good place to start. So we're stripping it down to some basics here. But I think another important caveat is none of this stuff will work if your music isn't on point. So, you know, work on your songwriting, work on your sound. We're just going to assume for the rest of the discussion that your music is good.
Yeah. Or work on your show, because it could be that your music's great, but your show's boring. And so people are bored and you're missing opportunity there as well. So yeah, all those things take into account, but it's also a process. We're talking about starting out. So it's not expected that as a first timer or somebody who hasn't been in the scene for a while, I'm not expecting that you show up being at the top of your game, but these are things that will help you start building some momentum.
Yeah. And the first thing is something we've already mentioned, but you need to get the people you do know out to your show. Even though you know one day they're not going to be your fans and they'll stop coming, you got to get them in that room, because the strangers that are in the room don't know that you know all those people personally. To them, it just looks like a crowded house that feeds your energy as a performer. It's going to feel more excited. And somehow we get like tricked or brainwashed into being more attentive and being more impressed by things that look like they're exciting and look like other people are into it. So you got to use your friends and family to fool other people into listening more than they might otherwise. And again, that's not to say your music isn't good. You just need to get them in the mindset that you're cooler than your friends think you are.
Yeah, it's like a magic trick. But actually, I think obviously we just went on and on about these people aren't your true fans, but you need to harness these folks to, at the beginning, very strategically, to make other people like, oh, it's okay to like this band. Other people, it's like that social
proof.
They want
permission. That's what they want permission to like.
And also, it's a great opportunity to get photos that you can use on your website and social, that again is that social proof and permission for other people. It's like, oh, other people like this band, I'll give it a shot. So yeah, use them strategically, knowing that that window of time is limited and they are not your true fans.
Yeah. Another thing is, no matter how many people are at the show, even if you show up and you're like, no one's going to be here, set up your merch booth, which I suppose also means you need to have some kind of merch, even if that's just handmade artwork or cheap stickers you can pass out, just something to draw people to a focal point where you'll have an email list or SMS, you know, cell phone number collection list, something like that. It should be well lit. You should absolutely set it up, even if you're like, oh, we're not really ready for this yet, because that is going to be, well, we'll talk about it later, but it's going to be a very important place to meet with fans after your show, or people who you want to turn into fans.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a tip in general, especially because it happens when you're starting out, there may not be many people there. Have that merch booth. And if you're an artist that's been playing and the show's poorly attended, or it's feeling like not a great night, the number one mistake bands make and artists make is pulling that merch booth. Like, oh, I don't want to set up, I'm embarrassed. It's like, no, the people that showed up should not be treated like second-class citizens because 100 other people didn't come out. They came out, give them the goods. And that merch booth, like you said, is really a place of a point of contact for people. And it's a place to grab email addresses. And, you know, sometimes you have those show where it doesn't seem like many people are there or into it. And you go back to your merch table. And if you've had like an email list sign up sheet out, you see a few names on there and like, hey, those people are people that felt compelled to put their name down even when it wasn't full or like the most amazing night.
Yeah.
Reward those people, follow up. I mean, those are the people you want to start collecting. So oftentimes we have a wrong viewpoint. Like, we should start with herds of people swarming the merch table because it's our first gig, and that's just not how it works. So yeah, that's one of the big places I see missed opportunity over and over again.
Yeah. And make sure it's well lit. And if you do have things for sale, make sure the prices are very like clearly on display. I sort of already mentioned this, but I think having some stickers or some buttons or pens or anything that you can make in bulk for really cheap with your band name or, you know, a cool graphic or something, have that. And you might even consider just giving it away early on. Like, yeah, hey, free pens at my merch booth, go sign the email list. And now they feel that kind of honor system pressure to go and provide contact info.
Yeah, I have found a company, many of you have probably used, they have no way paid me to say this, but Sticker Mule, get on their email list. When you get on their email list, and I don't know if it's just because I bought something from them, but I'm getting these like every couple weeks, I get these insane deals for like this week. It was those metal pins. And it was like, I can't remember what the amount was for the pins, but I know like some of the buttons have been like 50 for $29 or stickers, 100 for $29. They like the $29 price point. It's always $29. And they send you a free bottle of hot sauce with it, which is
Ooh, Sticker Mule. I got to get on this.
It's good hot sauce too. But Yeah, those deals are amazing. And it's like, take advantage of those. Get some small merch items, some stickers, some buttons or pins that are cheap. Even if you just spread those out across a merch table and an email list sign up, it'll do more to present yourself as like a band that's doing something and give them away. Like getting people to, you know, start repping you and providing that legitimacy, visual legitimacy other places. And don't worry about just the sale, because those things are so cheap that it's worth just getting it in people's hands, because then they have that a little extra connection and feel like, oh, that's cool. They gave me this for free. I'll wear that button.
Yeah. Well, the next thing on my list is something I should do a lot more than I have, but anytime I have done it, it's been really, really helpful, which is find someone in your little community who doesn't mind being like a social butterfly, sort of a salesperson, as long as they're not too pushy, and have them go around the room throughout your gig and after the gig with an email contact list or an SMS collection list or whatever. Maybe send them out with those stickers or buttons and have them go to every person in the room and like, hey, did you like the show? Like, if you want to get on their list, here's a free sticker. And you don't want that person to like badger or guilt people into signing the email list, because that's a worthless contact. They're going to unsubscribe. You want those people who truly liked your music, but to have someone else out there doing the work for you can be so great. You'll leave with way more emails than you would if you simply waited on people to come approach you.
Yeah. Here's a trick. Just thought of this. Just print out a full sheet of paper size QR code, like on a, if it's on like cardboard or poster board or something, so it's a little more or substantial, put on a clipboard. And have someone walk around and just have people scan the QR code with their phones, and it could take it to an email signup or SMS signup form. And then if they do that, they could get access to one of your tracks or something special, something like that. So like they've got their phone, they can do it. You know, they don't have to take a pen. You can just have everyone real quickly scan it. That's also something you could do from the stage. And it's kind of fun, interactive thing with the audience. Just get them to take some sort of action that gets you some contact information, because even if they're not super fans or all of them are like, okay, I just feel the social pressure to scan this QR code because someone's in my face. At least you're starting to get people, because you were talking about getting those true fans. You're getting people that are there. You're getting people that have had some sort of experience or connection with you. And now you're able to contact and communicate with them further.
Yeah. And that reminds me of something that was on our list for later, but I'll mention it now, is you could do a giveaway. If you announce from the stage, hey, everyone that, you know, scans this QR code, gives contact information, I'm going to pick one or two of you tonight to give a free t-shirt to, or whatever, or send you home with something cool. So like you could say it from the stage and literally everyone will do it all at once. So,
and your giveaways don't have to be just your band gear. If you have, people love free crap. I don't know why it is. And if you give them something of value, they go crazy for it. So like you could have like $2 $10 Amazon gift cards or something, and people will lose their minds trying to get signed up for the chance to win that. It's so funny to watch people at like games and concerts when, you know, they're throwing t-shirts into the crowd. People are like diving from the upper tiers.
I'm imagining
just to get a band free t-shirt with branding all over it, you know.
I'm imagining the artist on stage with the gun that shoots the shirts and stuff. Here's one that's really important. And I know we all, you know, we're all such tortured geniuses. After our show, we need to retreat to our sanctuary of aloneness and cheap beer.
I must not be disturbed.
I must not, but get over yourself and go directly to the merch booth afterwards and tell people, write it into your set list that you're going to call out your merch or call out the fact that you're going to be over at the booth and you'd love to meet everyone who came, and go immediately there after you get your stuff off stage. Of course, if there's another band playing, get off stage, then go to the merch booth.
Yeah. And if you don't have a merch booth for whatever reasons, maybe the venue doesn't permit it or whatever, be visible and say hi to people as they're walking or saying, thanks for coming. Hope you liked it. Just make that point of contact, because once you do that, people feel a little bit more obligated to follow up. Maybe they will go and listen, and maybe they will come again, you know. So that personal connection, and it just sets yourself apart from the rest of the pack.
Yeah. And when you're doing that and having these conversations, there's a weird balance between, you don't want to be a diva on the one hand, you don't want to be inaccessible and, you know, condescending to someone who's talking to you. And at the same time, you don't want to be too shy too, because like, it's perfectly fine to say, after you've had some small talk and met this person, be like, hey, are you interested in a CD or a shirt or whatever? Like, you still want to have the confidence to ask this person to do something and not feel like you're being, you know, cheesy salesman. So you, in some way, you kind of have to talk yourself up, get in a mode of like, even if you have to fake it, like fake some confidence. So eventually you get some results out of this.
We're all artists. We're all faking confidence.
Right. Right. But definitely don't be on the other side of it too. Like, don't be all about yourself or aloof, because I can think of a lot of the people I still consider like my true fans. Many of them are people I met at shows and I was just being accessible and, you know, just human. So
yeah, when you're playing live, there's a lot of opportunities where you can make connections around stuff that might be of interest to someone, or a conversation starter that makes them, okay, I like these guys or this group of individuals or that artist. It's like, sometimes it's someone comes up, starts asking you about your gear. Don't blow them off. Sometimes they are asking because they don't know what else to say and they just want to say they liked your music. So those awkward conversations, it's oftentimes people don't know what to say to show. And so it's like, be ready with a few things like, oh, you're interested in my gear. Oh yeah, this is how we use it. And, or if someone's like, oh, you sounded good. Hey, we've got another show coming up. We'd love to have you out. And being ready to look for those opportunities of connection with people is what I'm trying to say. Cause, you know, I've been at shows where someone comes up and they're like asking about your gear. And I've seen people just get blown off by like, I'm too busy tearing my gear down to talk to you, or finding that opportunity to build those relationships because you're doing something they're interested in. Let's make sure we're throwing a little fuel on the fire and not just blowing people off. Cause I think oftentimes that's what happens in the live space.
Yeah. We sort of touched on the next thing I wanted to mention, but I think if you're a solo artist, you should know it yourself. If you're in a band, you should discuss it and determine what your next priority is. And everyone have one priority in mind to communicate as they're talking to people in the audience. So it might be, hey, in 2 weeks, we're playing at this venue. I hope you come to the show. Tell your friends. If you have a gig coming up, maybe that's your priority. If you have a CD that's about to come out or a new record, or if you want everyone to go on Spotify and follow you there, make sure everyone's communicating the same priority so that people have a very clear idea of how to help you. And then along those lines, I sort of already said this too, but write a bunch of stuff into your set list that aren't just the song. So the merch call out or telling people you'll be at such and such a place in the venue to meet them. But not just that, write into your set list when you're going to talk about the meaning of a song or some dramatic event in your life or something super funny. Because a lot of times people in the audience need that extra musical hook to buy into the emotions that are in your song. So it might be that you told a story that made them sad, and then you play the song. That could be the thing that makes them a fan forever, is the fact that you wrote on your set list to tell that story. You're
take
laughing.
Away, make everyone sad at your shows.
What's Mary Gaucher's thing? You got to make them cry, laugh, and something else. Spend money at the bar or something. I don't know what the third thing is, but
I like that because, again, talking about finding those first true fans, I've been in the band and I've also seen so many bands where this is their in-between song thing. We've got a merch table in back. All right, next song. That is not a call out to the merch booth. Okay, we're not saying there's a merch booth. Like, we're not doing pointing out the obvious for people that, oh, that's what that table is with all the merch stuff on it. No, it's like, make some sort of connection about, like, take a merch on if you've got cool stickers or if there's a story behind why you liked a particular merch item, like, draw some sort of connection. Or wouldn't it be cool if everyone here was wearing a button right now? We've got buttons at our merch table. You know, make it fun and interesting.
I'm laughing because so many musicians, including myself, have all been guilty of doing that thing that you just said. My name's Chris Riley. I have some stuff. Like, what bullshit? We're on stage. We want to be worshipped. We want them all to shut up and listen and think we're amazing and then clap like they've never clapped before. But then when we're like, this is my name, why aren't we so like... this is my name. Go to my merch booth, buy my shit, like love me. But no, instead it's like, I want you to love me. What the hell? Why do we do that?
Well, this is one of the things, it's not on the notes here, but my biggest pet peeve of seeing artists is when they don't say what their name is. And I would say, I was just at South by Southwest a couple weeks ago, went to a bunch of independent showcases and shows by artists that didn't know who they were. Most of them didn't say who they were. You know, if I wanted to know, I had to go do the work and look it up. And it's like, I can't be a diehard fan if I don't even know your name. Tell me your name.
Get over yourself. You're on stage. Like, you want attention. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Oh, yes. With that, we may have wrapped up the things you should do when you're playing live. We can move to the online realm.
Yeah. I think to sum it up, what I think all these tips point to is be intentional with every moment of what you're doing. I can tell you, if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, you've heard me talk about the humiliating in-store things we used to do at Walmart for small town poets way back in the day. We had this gigantic, you know, mega sized merch booth set up in the men's department playing acoustic guitars as the people of Walmart go by, and nobody cared. We felt stupid, but then we met some of our biggest diehard fans that had driven miles, flown places, have brought massive amount of people to come see us because of those humiliating experiences. Now, I'm not saying the humiliation is the important part. I'm talking about being intentional with what you're doing, because it may seem like a small interaction or not super, you know, life-changing, but it could really amount to something. And it starts with being intentional with every moment you have while you are out being your artist persona, your musician career, being intentional.
Maybe to state the completely obvious, you don't jump from zero to 20,000 fans. You have zero fans, and then you have one fan, and then you have three fans, and then you have five, and then 20. Like, you got to start with lots of little interactions.
Yeah, you're not going to luck your way into this. I mean, that's just not how it's going to happen. You got to be intentional. All right, so online. Let's talk about online.
Yeah, so maybe some of this is debatable if it's a very new act and they don't have a ton. Maybe they've only released one song or they haven't released any songs. I still think you should at least have a presence on one social platform and choose your favorite. Start making some fun stuff there. Show your personality. And that gives you a place to drive whatever audience you encounter. And again, incentivize those friends and family and coworkers to like you and follow you in those places. And if they don't love your music, that's why you should also be showing your personality, because hopefully they like that at least if they're your friends. And if you're sharing that sort of stuff on social, that'll help you kind of gain some of that traction and get an engagement.
Yeah. One thing I'd say with online stuff, when do I harness and incentivize my friends and family to do something? I think live, it might be that you bring them in earlier, like at the very beginning. Social, I feel like if you're just starting out, get a platform, start using it, get some content out there, and you want your friends and family to follow you. But like the big ask in this area for your friends and family, I think, is when you have music to start asking them to share a link. But going to that well too often, just like in the concert space, you want to make sure you're not going to that well too early, in my opinion, before there's nothing really to share or it can't help build some critical mass.
Yeah. The next few things I think I can probably address in one little segment, but you're going to want to have a website. And I know a lot of artists just starting out are probably like, why the heck do I need a website? I don't have anything going on. I literally only have one gig on the books. I have no music out there. Your website can be a one-page site for now. And it should be a place that says who you are, says a little bit about what your goals are in music or what you sound like, why someone should care. And then you should have an email or an SMS collection form. It should be super visible above the fold, which basically means someone doesn't have to scroll to see it. You should have a very clear call to action that is also above the fold, and it should really focus on one objective, you know, do this thing, whatever it is, get on your email list, let's say. But in order for anyone to want to do that thing, or for you, if you're going to expect people to do that, you have to make it worth their time. So you have to have some pretty cool incentive or a little carrot to get them to take the action. And it can be a lot of different things, but it has to be more than just free song, you know, download a free song. That's very 10 years ago. It should be something that's either fun or very deep, or it could be a video. It could be, you know, it really could be anything, just something that feels exciting. And those three things work together: the incentive you're offering, a clear call to action, a clear goal, clear action for them to take, and all of it living on your website.
Yeah. Speaking of social, it's not on our notes here, but one thing that I think, if you're just starting out and you're trying to find true fans, and this is also a good thing to do, is every once in a while, if you're an established artist, go follow other artists in your same genre. Local artists, go follow bigger artists in the same genre. So you're seeing what they're doing, you're seeing their fans interact, and then you start interacting on their posts. And by interacting, I don't mean spamming links everywhere. And then you can go follow some of those fans that are really engaged, and oftentimes they'll follow you back. So that's a good way to start thinking about, how can I tap into fan communities that already exist around my style of music? Hashtags are good, although they don't seem to be as powerful as they used to be. They're always changing the algorithm, and it seems like it gets worse and worse. But hashtags, some good, well-selected hashtags that reach into certain audiences, can be helpful as well, just to start tapping into some of these communities that already exist around the kind of music you make.
Totally. Yeah, it's like, be a good digital citizen. Like, don't just spam everyone off the bat. You know, lurk for a little while, see what this community is all about, and then contribute something that's valuable to them before you ask anything. You got to like deposit goodwill before you make a withdrawal. But I think also, when we're talking about social, really concentrate on video. If you don't have video skills, start to develop them, because video is king. It's going to be the thing that makes your promo efforts go the furthest. It also keeps people entertained in ways outside of just your music. You might have different interests. You might be funny. You might whatever. Again, another way to quickly show your personality and keep people interested.
Yeah. And I think video and social, like, just thinking about what you said, being a good digital citizen, it's easy to shoot a quick video or make a quick post. Like, for right now, it's March Madness here in the US, which is when the college basketball playoff season, that's what they call it. And so a lot of people have been doing like a lot of comparisons, like this person versus this person, and like creating a bracket and going down to the winner. And I've seen other industries doing that during this time. Like, I saw a donut company doing it. Like, does this donut beat out this donut? So it's a way you can create some content ideas around which artist you prefer, this band or this band. And it's not your band. It's, again, thinking about being a contributor to that fan community and driving conversations. And then as people start seeing you, you then like, hey, here's a link to my music. Check it out. You know.
Yeah. And that's sort of partially about finding where your music fits in an existing space. And that could be that you participate in some like Twitter spaces conversations, or you realize you love a particular genre and you want to make a Spotify playlist that maybe has one of your songs, but really it's about servicing the needs of a community first. Another thing I really want to drive home is that if you have an email list or an SMS list that you've created, you have to use it. And this is something, for some reason, artists are so terrible at. Like, months and months will go by before you send an email. Don't get into that habit. Like, even if you have five people on your list, use your email list, because it's going to help you develop good habits. It's going to help you test out what drives results, and you'll get better at it. And also, that's just how you get your fans to do stuff. Like, you've got their contact information, so contact them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just go look at every opportunity, especially in your area. Like, what companies should you be following? We mentioned artists, but then also like fan communities, what fan communities exist, and how can you start getting an understanding of what people are talking about and how you can contribute to the conversation? Most artists just start showing up places and just saying, listen to my music, and then they bail. That's not going to work here. That's not how you start getting people interested in what you're doing. Because again, we're still talking about how to find those first true fans online. It's going to feel like work. And that's what it is. It's work.
It's work.
But it's work you can do. It's no one stopping you from doing it. It's just work. And sometimes it feels like there's not much fruit, but it's, again, you're trying to start just building something, and you have to start somewhere. And you're looking towards things that will eventually help build a little more critical mass.
Well, speaking of starting somewhere, that brings us to our third and last section in this, which is about basically harnessing the things you can in your local scene. Like online, that's a global thing. That's massive. And sometimes because it's global, it can feel daunting. You don't know where to start. But here's some things you should do in your local scene. First is go to shows and just be active in the community. Meet people. If you see a band you like, meet them afterwards. Tell them. And don't necessarily always have something you want out of it. Just show your face, participate. That is probably common sense to some degree, but also sometimes artists can be self-obsessed and they want to practice their music, but aren't all that interested in seeing other people's music. But it might be the best thing you do for yourself is just become part of a scene.
Yeah. And that takes time and effort. It's not as easy as some of the things you can do online, but going to a show, and especially like if there's bands that you wish you could be opening for them, because eventually you want to be playing the stages they're playing as the headliner and have the audience that they have. Go to those shows. Be helpful to the band. Help them move their gear. Introduce yourself, because, you know, maybe there's a time that you can open for them. Just play 20 minutes, you know, something like that.
Yeah, well, I guess it to bring it back to the topic of the show is like, well, how does that help me make my first true fan? Well, your first true fan might be in that band's audience. And so the more you become part of a scene, you will play shows together. You might have promo efforts that lock up together. You might get press in the same magazine. There's just this sort of halo effect or synergy or whatever that can happen, where once you have this overlap of interest, well, then you start to make fans in their audience and maybe vice versa. So to get back to the like self-serving aspect of it, it's about finding new listeners.
The last thing I'd say on that is that, you know, when I go to shows, I'm usually like observing the audience and seeing what did this band do that seems to be working. If we share a similar audience type, we mentioned QR codes earlier. You may have an audience that hates that idea or is just not going to do it or is technologically challenged. Not everything's going to be universal for all audiences. So it's like part of being in the scene is these are people that could be at your show. What is this artist doing that seems to be working? How are they capturing attention? How are they turning these people into lifelong fans? Observe what they're doing. And maybe there's missed opportunity you'll see, but that's also why being in the scene is important, because some of the work is already being done and you just have to do it too.
Yeah. Well, another thing that you should definitely do in your local scene is to reach out to all of the local press. And I don't just mean the newspapers, the arts weeklies. Like, I'm talking like the neighborhood magazines that do the one page fold out thing and the online event community calendars, like literally anything that covers music and live events in your whole area. Reach out to these people, and they might hate me for saying this, but I think you should reach out to try to establish a relationship even before you have a request. You know, even if it's like, hey, Ned, I loved that show preview you did for this band. That band's awesome. Thanks for covering them. Like, done. Now, suddenly, next time you write that person and you want a review or a show preview or something, like, they might remember you. So in that same way, be a part of the press scene. Without being a pest, you don't want to be writing them all the time, but I think establish relationships before you need them.
Yeah, they're people too. So, you know, you can appeal to them on different levels. Like, hey, I'm new in the scene. I love your writing, or I've always read your column. Can I buy you lunch or take you to coffee or get a beer with you and just hear more about your advice for connecting in this area?
My email would go something like this. Hey, I'm new in this scene and I've noticed you're a huge asshole. You really are so snarky and you tear bands apart. So I want to know what you dislike so I can avoid it. Sincerely, Chris, can I take you to coffee?
Can you just crush my dreams in private instead of waiting until you write some scathing article about our latest release? That would be better. But oftentimes these folks, they work usually pretty thankless jobs. It's a lot of these gatekeepers that people, musicians look at. It's like all day long, people just want something from them. And being a columnist at your weekly paper isn't the greatest gig ever either. It may not be a bad gig, but it's not like the featured reporter at the New York Times or whatever this person may have aspired to be. I don't know. But oftentimes people are just trying to get from them and it feels like all the relationships are just taking. Try a different approach and like, hey, can I give something to you and just hear about your story? Oftentimes people will respond positively. When I was in Nashville, I had a roommate that just started reaching out to top session players and asking them if he could take them to dinner. And they were more than happy to. And you're like, these people are like playing on the best records, but they're also people that, again, don't get,
they don't get the star studded attention.
Yeah. They don't get attention a lot. And just having someone like be thoughtful and do something for them feels good.
Yeah. Well, two other people you should reach out to while we're lumping in press, not just press, but also local community radio DJs, college radio DJs, people who run record stores. There might be chances to do in-studio performances or in-store performances. So sort of include them in your roster of people you try to make some relationships with. The next thing probably sounds very old-fashioned, but I've actually noticed it can be really powerful, which is put up posters, make postcards, like have in real life visuals that are in the record stores and on the phone booths and wherever else, because I think everyone thinks so much about their phones now that when people are walking down the street, they're almost surprised to see actual physical things. And I noticed for me, I'm like, oh, cool, band posters. Those are still a thing. And I actually read them and take more of an interest now than I ever have. So if you have the time and effort and design skills and a Saturday afternoon to hang up a bunch of posters or, you know, put them on community corkboards, I think you totally should.
I agree. And this is something I noticed at South by Southwest. There was considerably less flyers and posters around. Now, I know there was less attendance, but there was still plenty of artists playing, plenty of things happening. And in years past, there, I remember one year we had a showcase and we were putting up posters on the telephone poles on 6th Street in Austin. And we completely covered it. I took a photo of it and literally in a minute, someone had already started covering it. And in like 10 minutes, it was completely covered.
That was fun. I don't miss those days of like the telephone pole wars.
Yeah. But I did notice there was some cool posters this year. Like I said, there was a lot less visuals because I think people are thinking more just digital. And I actually stopped and took photos of some really cool posters of bands that I thought looked interesting because you don't see it as much anymore. And so, yeah, that real in real life is still important. And it's also a much less cluttered space these days than the digital space.
Well, you know, you're talking about South by Southwest posters. And I'm thinking, who needs posters when there's a drone QR code in the sky? That was like, what, 6,000 feet wide or something? That was nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, indie bands, you're not going to pull that one off.
You need like 500 drones. That sounds expensive.
One reminder I have is if you're booking shows or have some event, like make sure you communicate with the venue or the other acts or whoever is sponsoring it, maybe some local businesses, get them to actively partner with you about communicating the show, because it could be your first true fan or a handful of fans aren't even aware of this thing until the business that's involved or the sponsor or the venue sends out their email list or their Facebook event or whatever. So don't forget to just harness as much communication power as you can. The last thing was like the same thing as we were saying, be a good digital citizen, is just be a good member of your community. And like you already said, find ways of helping out. That could mean you're hosting house shows or basement shows, or you're curating a battle of the bands. You know, just how can you solve problems in your musical community? And when you do, it's going to open doors. And when you open doors, new members of your audience might be behind door number two.
Yeah. And also when thinking about finding your first fans, and this is an opportunity just to expand your fan base as well. Oftentimes you are participating in communities that are based on something else. But the fact that you are a musician is really cool to that community and they rally around you. This is where I think a lot of the success stories we've been seeing around NFTs and a lot of the storylines around that are artists that have been very involved in the cryptocurrency community. And when an NFT opportunity came up, they're already in a community that's interested in something that they're about and they have this commonality. And so now they kind of want to support this artist, or they're intrigued or interested because we have this other shared commonality. I think that happens a lot. If you remember Simon from The Slants, he's been a speaker at our conference. He's going to be back again this year. He was on the podcast several years ago, but he was talking about how they were very big in anime communities and lawyer communities because of some shared commonalities. The lawyer thing, because of all the things he went to, and ended up going to the Supreme Court over the trademarking their band name, that this tapped them into a lawyer community that was very interested in them as an artist because there was something that resonated with them that was outside of the music. So my point being that sometimes there's some opportunities that are that commonality that exists with groups, and you're the one musician they know, and so they rally around you. Mm-hmm. Different than friends and family and coworkers, but not to be overlooked.
All right, folks, you've got about 75 new things to do to try to make that first fan.
Yeah, and the main thing to point out is intentionality. Finding new fans is going to be work, and you being intentional with every opportunity you have and not let it pass by. Doesn't matter how big or small it is, don't let it pass by. You're talking about making true fans, and at the beginning, it can feel like finding individuals one by one. We didn't get into advertising. There's some other things, other layers that you can obviously do to throw gasoline on the fire, but we were just trying to start out with the most simple things that you could start doing right now. Of course, advertising and all that stuff getting more complex and targeting people. Yes, that's other ways, but we're talking about just the
kind of guerrilla grassroots type stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you have a suggestion or something you've tried that's worked, or something you feel like we didn't tap into on this, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. Have you done something that's worked well? Are you tapping into some new fans? Share your thoughts. Or if you just have some questions, those work too. So you have the number and the email address. So with that, let's get into our first call.
Hi guys, this is Jessica Girono. I've called in a few times before. I work with an artist named Dante Mazzetti. Anyway, I'm calling because I have two questions. One is, he wants to record, or he kind of has reimagined one of his old songs from his first album a long time ago, and he wants to re-release that, and I'm wondering about titling. Do we title that as the same title and then alternate version, or something else? My second question is about cover songs. I'm really confused about the new rules under the MLC, and it's my understanding that we don't have to go get a compulsory license on a song-by-song basis anymore, that Spotify and Apple and all those have blanket licenses, so we can just cover the song and then release it. Is that right? And I just need to know if we need to go through any sort of other license for that. Dante's had a music supervisor approach him to do a couple covers of songs to possibly place in TV. And so we want to make sure that we have all our bases covered as far as all that goes. And then we'll probably release the covers on Spotify and whatnot. All right. Thanks so much, you guys. Amazing podcast. And oh, I also want to vote on, yes, more rants, Robley rants. All right. Bye guys.
All right, the people have spoken. Rob Lee Rance. Yes.
They like Angry Me.
The second question about the covers for Sync. Yes, there is a compulsory license. It's still good to go to easysonglicensing.com and get a license, because not all the platforms are covered in some cases, and especially downloads. Downloads, and you know, if you're selling downloads on Bandcamp or your own website, those still require a license. But yeah, if you just released a track for streaming only on Spotify, yes, there is a compulsory license that covers the cover song there. But it's still good to go ahead and make sure you're cleared for all usage types. It's very easy. It's in the name. What was the first question, Chris, that she had?
It was about retitling a song or how to make a version of it because it's a new, I forget if it's a new recording, but my first thought, and I don't know if this is meets with the metadata guidelines, but you could do like, you know, 2022 version or some indicator that it's the same composition, but a new recording. And you would want to check our help center.
Yeah, there's options there based on how you want to do. So check out our help center on that one. All right. Let's see. I've got a quick email here and then we'll get our last call. Hey guys, so appreciate the podcast. It's been a huge source of information and inspiration to me. I'm a big fan of YouTube Music. I love that you can seamlessly toggle back and forth between song and video during playback. My question is, what is the backend process to get YouTube Music to connect those two? The audio track that I released through CD Baby with the music video that I released through YouTube, I can't seem to figure out how to make that connection. Thanks, David. David, the main thing you need to do is, if you're using CD Baby, log into your account and click on the link under the Tools and Promotion tab. That's
YouTube official artist channel.
Yeah, YouTube official artist channel. That brings those two worlds together. The important thing to note, though, is that when they first launched it, they were letting anybody with any release do it. Now you have to have, I think, at least three releases with your distributors before they do it. So that brings the YouTube Music and that topic channel and your stuff all together in a way that's really good. So I've done that on Small Town Poets YouTube channel, and that should solve the problem that he's describing here.
Yeah, well, and for anyone who has questions about the mechanics of how YouTube functions and, you know, the different places and usages of music on YouTube, we recorded an episode probably like a year ago, maybe sometime in the last year, all about the stuff that artists need to know when their music goes on YouTube. So check that out too. It's pretty in depth.
Yep. All right. We've got one last call. Let's get to it.
Hey guys, this is Brian from the band Reality Suite. And I had a quick question about releasing new music. I refer to the DIY podcast, you know, quite often. And I do searches on YouTube. You know, there's lots of different little shorts and shows about releasing music and different tactics to use to market it and so on. A lot of overlapping, and some even have unique ideas. But one question I had for you guys, and this is maybe more opinion related, but we have a lot of indie radio stations, some internet, some terrestrial radio that support us, and we have a new song coming out. We're just about to engage in a pre-save and pre-order campaign. And I was wondering how you guys feel about releasing the song to indie radio during the pre-save and pre-order campaign. So, for example, if they play it, hopefully somebody will discover it. They'll look us up and they'll say, oh, this new song's coming out in 2 weeks. I'm going to pre-save that type of thing. Do you guys see a value in that? Is it too soon to share the music? Should we share the music after it drops so that when people discover it, they can just buy it or save it or whichever? What are your feelings on that? Again, Brian from the band Reality Suite. I appreciate you guys. You're awesome. Thanks.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think it depends on how big a radio campaign they're talking about, because if it's a sort of a small indie radio campaign, I don't think it matters all that much, actually. It's like, you might have the thought of, oh, we're getting attention on radio, and they can't, and listeners can't do anything further. They can't buy it yet. They can't stream it. They can't add it to a playlist. So is that wasted energy? I don't know. But to some degree, it might be kind of overthinking it to even worry about the timing of that. But if it's a massive radio campaign, I don't know. What's your thought?
Well, back in the day when radio was important, I'm sure it's still important to the three people that can get on it. The first single always came out before the music was ready. It was kind of like got people excited before the album was out. So it'd be like the first single would drop a month or two ahead, sometimes more. I think the world's changed since then. I'm always of the thought that as an independent artist, if someone's hearing your music and then they go to take further action, there should be something for them to do. Unless you've really got something good that's building up, to, you know, and the radio's really building up to something. I'm always of the thought that, hey, I want people to be able to do something. And I don't know how much radio even cares about release schedules anymore. I know they want the latest music, but I know back in the day that used to be important, timing of the release with the single release and all that. But I don't know how much that's going to impact what you do now.
Yeah, well, when you say as an indie artist, you want someone to be able to do something if you've got their attention, which I agree with. And I think he's asking, is the pre-save enough? And I kind of feel like for me, I would say no. Like if I was listening to some college radio station and I heard a song I liked, I would expect to be able to Shazam it and get to it on Spotify, or wait till they announce what it is and then hear it on Spotify, even if it's only available as a single and the album isn't out yet. So it, to that degree, it does maybe feel like wait until the song is available and then have the pre-save just as the teaser opportunity for your existing audience to buy in early, and maybe they get led to private SoundCloud or, you know, unlisted YouTube video or something. But
I see like a pre-save as being something for your fans that are already bought in.
Yeah. I doubt anyone would hear it on the radio and then pre-save your song.
No, I wouldn't think so. But getting them to go there and maybe listen to it on Spotify and go, hey, I like this, and throw it in a playlist or save it or follow you as an artist, that seems like a logical step. All right. Well, that brings us to the end. Again, if you have a question or comment or want to weigh in on finding true fans, you can do so at 360-524-2209. Or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And Chris, I've got to jump to a meeting, so I think we're going to have to call it there.
All right. Well, next week will be fun. We're going to talk to one of my friends who makes super creative Instagram reels and TikTok videos to promote his music.
Excellent. I can't wait.
Cool. See you then.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.